You're gonna notice things that other people won't notice. The amount of time that I would just stare, like, "Oh, that's a really nice rock," you know, like typical 3D artist thing, like, "Oh, that's I like how the moss is like kind of built up." And I would just like stare at this thing, and like, you know, my girlfriend's just like, "What are you doing, you idiot?" Like,
something.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hi, Maxine.
Hey, Justin, what's up?
So this week I talked to Will Fauché. He's an amazing Unreal artist. We've been using him sometime over at Epic.
Oh, yeah. William's one of our CG Spectrum mentors.
Yeah.
What did you guys talk about?
Honestly, we talked about so much stuff. Basically, he's very much self-taught, but he moved to Norway. He's working, he's living his dream. He's doing photography. He's just cranking out all this amazing stuff, especially working with studios like Epic, and then working with other studios outside of it using captured reality. Like, he's just killing it. He also started a YouTube channel like right when the pandemic started, and he has almost 80,000 subscribers.
Whoa, that's crazy.
He's just killing it. So I'm excited to have everyone hear what we talked about.
So when I was starting out in Montreal, the game industry was pretty big already. Like, Ubisoft was there. I think you had THQ back in the day. Funcom was there, I think. You know, there were quite a few studios, but now it just kind of exploded since, because a lot of VFX studios left Vancouver when the tax breaks kind of stopped being a thing, and then they just all came to Montreal instead, because it is way cheaper in Montreal than the West.
Yeah, the price of living there, I noticed when every single time I visited that it was just, wow, the hotel's this much, and it was a really nice one, the food's this much. You went to a school first and studied and got the... It's kind of a crappy experience for you?
Yeah. So the school I went to, this was kind of right after I finished high school. I started college, but, you know, I was still kind of finding my way in the world. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And, you know, lo and behold, found that there's this 3D art school in my hometown, which is fantastic. So I signed up. It was a for-profit private school. So obviously super expensive. You know, you've heard this story before. Terrible school. Really bad. It's the type of school that just, you know, hired its own students after they graduated because they couldn't get actual industry professionals to work there. I mean, I learned a very, very core basics of 3D, but for the most part, I prefer to say that I'm self-taught. Honestly, I think the internet was the best place to learn. Like, were you familiar with Polycam back in the day?
Man, I'm so much older than you. Polycam back then, it's like, I used to go on Polycam all the time.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. It's terrible to say, but when I was in college, the internet was not really good.
Oh, right.
But we were like, oh, cool, the internet. Like, you barely use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Polycom's great. I loved going to Polycom mainly because it wasn't to see the finished work. I like seeing the work in progress. Yeah. I like seeing what people are doing. I like the process.
Best learning experience ever. Like, not just that. Like, it was much more niche at the time. Like, it was a very small cluster of people, so everyone kind of knew each other. I want to say there were like fewer than 100 like really active members.
Yeah, and you always knew which ones they were, because they were always posting up the posts, and they were responding. Like, I never responded or anything. I would just pop on it once in a while and be like, really cool work, and I sometimes poach people for studio work.
That's awesome. And the thing, it was such a great learning experience, because you had like the industry veterans who would just kind of go in and like they would take screenshots of your work, do paint overs in Photoshop, and tell like, oh, you should fix this and that, and like nobody does that anymore. It was just an amazing experience.
They did it like crazy there.
Yeah, but they were harsh. They were extremely harsh in the critique. And that's one thing I vividly remember, where they would actually tear you apart if you just posted art that was kind of mediocre. And, but you know, that was a great place to learn how to accept constructive criticism and apply it to your own work. Because when you realize that it's not you personally, right? It's not like a personal attack against you. It's constructive feedback. And that's where it weeded out the people who are just too thin skinned and they just, oh, you're mean. And then they just left. And then you had the people who were like, okay, you know, I appreciate the feedback. And then they applied it to their work. And that's, you just watch them grow. Like those work in progress threads, you can see like the progress of a given project from A to Z. And it was just an awesome way to learn. Just learn from their mistakes. And, you know, you could just learn from your own mistakes as well. And it's really cool to see that progression. And you don't have that anymore. And that was my schooling experience, really.
Well, I think the reason why they don't have anymore is because it's a combination of, you know, the internet's become a toxic place.
Yeah.
These things called trolls are pretty relevant around things. And it's the time. I feel like there are tools. There's things like Sync Sketch and all that stuff that people can use to do that. I just think like 15 years of teaching and I've seen so many people take things offensively. And I'm like, no, that's just feedback. Yeah. Like, nothing's personal. No. Even at a job, like I was always blown away when people would take things personally. And I'm like, well, they just scrapped my project and I spent like 6 months. I'm like, did you get paid for those 6 months? Well, yeah. I'm like, then why are you upset?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think the biggest thing is like artists have a hard time not attaching their personality and like every, like they, it's a hard thing to be kind of like, hey, I made this. Mm-hmm. Even though the reality is you made it for the team and the team is funded by the publisher and like basically they could scrap it.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like it really sucks. You've been pouring your light, your heart and soul into a project for 2 or 3 years and then the whole project gets canned. It stings. Oh, yeah. It really sucks, especially if you don't have anything to show for it. Like your portfolio just takes a big hit and you're like, ah, crap. Because especially some studios are really strict with their NDAs, like what you can or can't show.
I had that happen to me many, many times that like when I was working on really cool projects and they're almost right about the door and then they pull the rug and I'm like, no.
Yep.
You can't show anything. Nope. Because I feel like there's like this thing that they don't want people to even know. So like even back in the day, they didn't want to know certain things got scrapped because it could be science seen as like a sign of like, oh, the studio's in trouble. Yeah. So stock price might drop. What do you think the benefits of being self-taught are?
There are definitely quite a few pros and cons. Like self-taught is you save a ton of money, right? Like you don't need to, you learn at your own pace and you kind of, you learn through necessity. You learn kind of what you need to learn when you need it, and it doesn't cost anything. Mm-hmm. Especially with the internet nowadays, there are tutorials galore on YouTube and Gumroad and everything. The downside of being self-taught is you really need to be disciplined. So, you know, that's kind of the hard thing. It's really hard to, especially if you're going to replace traditional education with being self-taught. Like let's say you're going to take a year to self-teach yourself 3D. It's hard to not have that drive, that motivation, that discipline to stay focused all year. Like, okay, I'm going to do an 8 hours of work today. And you also, it's something it's hard. You kind of have to know where to look as well. You need to know what is important. And that's not always easy when you're self-taught. I had the benefit of, I was really lucky because I got a job pretty much right out of that 1 year program that I went to. So while I was self-taught, I was also working production. You know, I kind of learned a lot of what is important in production. You know, we have stuff like deadlines and what the budgets are and all that sort of thing. And that's something you might not always know about when you're self-taught. Tutorials don't always talk to you about, you know, actual production work with deadlines and crunch. And that's not something you can just self-teach yourself. That's something you need to experience. So, you know, production is probably the biggest teacher, for lack of a better word. It's the best way to learn. It's like learn on the job.
How important do you think having a community to work with is?
Super important, because you have to like be able to compare yourself to something, right? Because you can be doing your own work that you think looks amazing and you don't have like anything to compare yourself against. Well, you know, it's really hard. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's definitely harder to know, you know, what that bar of quality is, because, you know, when you're working in a production and you have a supervisor pretty strict, like, hey, no, you got to raise that bar of quality or keep pushing you and pushing you. You're not necessarily going to know how far you need to push yourself when you're self-taught. So having a community to call you out in your shit and point out your inconsistencies and point out your errors or mistakes or, you know, that's very, very helpful. Just having someone who's been there before, have someone who's, you know, he's been around the block to point out, like, hey, like, I see what you're doing. Good job. But be aware of X, Y, Z down the road, because someone who has a lot of experience will be able to see the problem that you're going to have, you know, in 2-3 weeks or a month, right?
It's kind of cool though, because that becomes, not to tote the CG Spectrum horn, but I will. That's, I think they found a nice line between the middle of that where they provide the content to help you learn at your own pace, but you have that community and you have that mentor to help keep you like on track and to either point out new tools or it's kind of like, you know, we're letting you go with the bicycle without the training wheels, but hey, there's a garbage can you might hit up there.
Exactly.
And when I was in college, because it seems like we went to the same type of school, I always wanted to stop going there, but I was like, all right, well, I just need to finish it just so I can get the degree, which, you know, I I don't know if it did anything. I can't really tell.
Did you get a degree out of it? Like an actual like bachelor's or?
Yeah, I got a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
Yeah. It's opened so many doors. I'm sure it's done some stuff. Ironically, I was turned down from so many teaching jobs because I didn't have a master's, which really? I always thought was the worst idea. Yeah. And it's not an insult to anyone that has a master's. I just was like, "What is that? That's your kind of gauge.
That's the hill you're going to die on, really."
Yeah, and you know, I found schools along the way that were more open to it. But stuff that CT Spectrum does by working with someone like yourself or other people who traditionally don't have masters, because we bring other things to the table, like you just said, understanding production tables, or even you. Being able to work remotely and being able to do what you do and being able to be self-taught, that's a skill set that beyond everything else that you do have knowledge-wise, it's like so many people just don't know how to teach themselves, which is ironic because after you get done in school, all you're doing the rest of your time in this industry till you retire, actually, you're just teaching yourself.
Yeah, but at least you know, at least the thing is once you're out of school and once you're working in production, at least you kind of have a touchstone, like you kind of know what to focus on from there, right? It kind of keeps you focused, keeps you grounded, it keeps you aware of the things that are changing, techniques, because like we work in a cutting edge industry where things change so fast. From, you know, back when specular maps were like the big new thing, and you're like, wait.
HDRI is like, oh my God, what's that?
Exactly. Or when PBR became a thing, like that just like broke so many people's brains, right? And so being aware of all those changes is really important. And that, you know, self-teaching yourself from there is pretty straightforward. It's not too bad. But yeah, like there's always new tools to learn, always new program. Like now I'm going to have to start picking up Blender soon because like it's becoming awesome, apparently.
I would say I've always been hesitant on Blender. Not that I don't think it's a good tool. It's just that I've always just used Maya and I feel like there's other tools I got to learn before I jump onto that one. Like I need to learn Houdini and learn more of this.
100%. It's just, it never stops. Like there's always more to learn. And so that's kind of, it's both encouraging and depressing at the same time. Like, oh God, I have to learn another thing. Oh no. But at the same time, it's exciting because it's new.
So how do you keep part? I guess the question of that, I mean, being self-taught and just being where you are, like career-wise, we'll talk about that in a second. Like, do you have where you're like, hey, I'm going to stay in this lane. I'm going to deal with these softwares and focus on these disciplines. There's all these things I would love to try, but no, I need to do this because if I start doing that, then I'll sidetrack my time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, I think it's all about you should focus on what you think will immediately make your work better. If you can learn something that helps you work faster, more efficiently, do more in less time, great. All for it. Go learn it. If you're trying to add another entire skill set to your existing skill set, that can be either hit or miss. Because if you're a modeler and suddenly you start like, oh, I'm going to learn animation, that's fine. I encourage it, but it's not going to help you make your job faster, right?
Yeah, I've heard. See, like, and that's the thing that, like, especially when just talk, it's not just students; it's like junior artists in general too. Like, see someone's portfolio. And they insist on modeling, texturing, rigging, and animating their character and saying that they're an animator. I'm like, you don't have to do any of that. You go to any studio, you're just going to be using the character rig to animate. So why not spend the time perfecting that and really understanding like that aspect as opposed to showing. I think, you know, you don't have, like, I think people get overwhelmed with the options they have. And it's like, you don't have to do it all. Like,
even when you get a job, you're going to be doing one thing, usually. I mean, unless you work in my case, it was a bit of an exception. When you work in a smaller studio, it's always a bit of an exception because you do a lot of everything. And in larger studios, it's less the case. You tend to be more focused on one specific thing. But in smaller indie studios, that's kind of what I enjoyed from where I work is, you know, we do some, you know, from like sketching, from concepting to modeling, to texturing, to actually getting stuff in the game and doing layout and environment art and do a little bit of character work as well. And, you know, I would, you know, do a lot of things at once. And that was really fun. That was a great learning experience.
I get it. Cause it's like, if you have an idea in your head, it's kind of cool to be like, I can do the whole thing. I don't need anyone. So releasing the reins from that type of creative control for anyone who is creative is kind of like you're trying to put trust in someone else in the pipeline that they will do, especially like if you're someone who's like, hey, I have to model this, I'm gonna assume that you're gonna know how I would have unwrapped and textured this and then built the shader. And if they do it wrong, you're like, oh man,
yeah,
I should have just done the whole thing myself.
I know, I feel you. I feel, and that's kind of where like it's nice to have someone who is a specialist in one thing, but it's so much more useful to have a bit of a generalist on a team, because sometimes, you know, especially on smaller teams, some dad has to go pick up his kid at kindergarten, or, you know, he's sick or something. You have to fill in those shoes. So it's good to have a broad understanding of a variety of tasks, but I think it's really important to like have a pretty good understanding of the basic before you spread out too much.
Yeah. I totally agree. And that is something that's real. I mean, I feel like as people progress into their industries, they do generally understand how everything, it's like, you know, a contractor is not going to do the plumbing or electric, but they know how to do it if they need be. Yep. They understand the process. Well, okay. So after you got done with Montreal, like give us a little rundown on your career, like until where you are now.
So Montreal was, I was there for the first 5 or 6 years of my career. So I was working in games that whole time. And then I kind of grew, honestly, there was a time where I kind of grew fed up with the industry. I was tired of all the crunch. I was tired of all the work. I'm like, I want to just back off for a while. So it was, you know, hit a wall and I went traveling for a while. And that was probably the greatest experience, best decision I ever made, to be honest. So I went traveling for 3-4 months, backpacking across Europe, and then came back. And then realized, like, hey, you know what? I'm starting to get that ZBrush itch again. I really want to. I can't just quit. I want to do some more sculpting. So at the time, I was living in Victoria, which is near Vancouver, and so I was, you know, applying for jobs all over the globe. Right? I was just kind of in that traveling mindset. Like, I don't care if I work in Kuala Lumpur or Singapore or Norway, wherever. And so, lo and behold, got a job offer in Norway and moved here. And so that was a job. It was the perfect entrance because this was a VFX studio. So it was in the film industry, but they were working on an Unreal-based project. And so because I had been using Unreal, you know, my whole life, basically, not my whole life, but my whole career, it just kind of lined up, the stars aligned and made the move for it. And that was an amazing learning experience because going from games to film, I mean, you realize in film that the bar of quality is just so much higher. Like it's just way, way less forgiving in terms of like, hey, in games, you know, you'll start sculpting some wrinkles and stuff on a character. In film, you like sculpt the pores and like actually the hair and the peach fuzz. Like you go way further in the level of detail, which is really fun. Amazing learning experience. But like, I think my games experience helped me a lot here because in games, it's a lot of problem solving. And in VFX, it's a lot of problem solving as well. So it's kind of, you know, I brought some new tricks to the table and it was just awesome to learn about the whole film pipeline.
So I originally wanted to do film and animation, but when I started, I was working on PlayStation 1. So the graphic comparison can be so huge. But now, you know, with UE5 coming out and just like, you know, metahumans and everything like that, like, are you seeing a closer kind of like film and animation kind of starting to like, ooh.
Definitely. And there's a reason why like everyone and their mom is trying to learn UE5 now, because, you know, they saw those demos like, whoa, like that's, you can do that in real time now. That's amazing. And so you have a whole bunch.
Wouldn't that be hilarious if our moms were actually trying to learn Unreal 5?
Well, you have a lot of VFX artists now who are trying to learn Unreal, and they're completely gobsmacked because nothing makes sense, right? Like nothing in the games industry had the same design philosophy as film. So when you're trying to do things from a VFX perspective, and you're like, wait, this makes no sense. But you know, for games artists, like, it's like, oh yeah, that's just like, yeah, normal maps, of course. And in game, in film, you're like, wait, normal maps? What the heck is that? You don't really use.
I feel like games artists, and this is no offense to visual effects artists, I feel like it's much, in my mind, I've done some both, but it, like with film, the director is telling you, showing you exactly what you want, they want you to look at for how long and what's the subject matter. Plus, there's editing and color grading and all this stuff afterwards. With games, you're kind of just being like, all right, cool. Anyone can control the camera. You have no idea what they're going to do with it, how close they're going to get. They can break everything. And by the way, everything has to run 30 frames a second.
It's a different set of challenges. Like I would not say, having worked in both, I wouldn't say that one is easier than the other or one is harder than the other. I think they both have unique challenges that you need to approach. Sometimes the fact that you know what you're going to see and when for how long, that can be a pain in the butt too, because that means that everything needs to look absolutely perfect. And so it's a different.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think with movies too, there's this expectation that it has to be so perfect. So
yes, and like you have way more people like pixel peeping your shots than ever before. Like people in film, like you, it goes to your supervisor, and it goes through like his supervisor, and it goes to the client, and it goes to like the director, and it's just like there's so many more eyes, pixel people, and like zooming into 300%. Like, oh, this, these pixels are no. I need to fix that.
Yeah, that would never happen in games. Could you imagine doing that for the whole experience?
No, exactly. So that's what I mean. Like the bar quality is like the expectation is so much higher in film. That's a blessing and a curse, right? So it's, I think it's a lot more fun.
I didn't think about that. That's a good point. Cause it's like with games, cause the scene's so big, they're just like, oh, just give it to QA. That looks good. It's like, and I feel like with games, it's a little bit more forgiving cause you can be like, ah, it's a bug, or we didn't plan on that person walking.
Well, that's the thing. You can get away with tileable textures a bit more, right? You got to break it up and like more modular assets, but in film, like, oh, hey, like I see this brick the same place twice. Like, no. So, it's so like I said, different challenges. It's not easier or harder. It's just different. So I think it's pretty, especially now, it's a lot easier for people to kind of go from one industry to the other because those two worlds are starting to converge and get a lot more similar now than they used to be.
That's kind of like led you where you are now with more of the education, YouTube and content creation side. So tell us about that. How did that get started? Because you've flown in like crazy, like everyone's like, oh, your name's dropped around like the forums all the time.
I mean, that kind of that would pure luck and right place, right time kind of thing.
You worked hard.
I mean, true, I did, but at the same time, like I think, like I said, just right place, right time. And it just so happened that I started a channel during COVID. It was December 2020. And so, you know, this was a time where like I was slowly starting to take on more freelance work. I was still working in the studio. But a former supervisor of mine, a VFX supervisor, he'd worked on he was a comper on The Lord of the Rings. Like he's a veteran. He'd been working for VFX for 30 years. Nice. And he asked me like, hey, you want to make this? I'm starting this, this class. You want to make a course for me? I'm like, sure, why not? So with that money, I bought a microphone, bought a webcam and everything, and made a course for that guy, for the supervisor. So this was about maybe fall 2020. And then, you know, winter came along and, hey, you know, I got all this equipment. I might as well, I'll try out this YouTube thing just for fun, see what happens. And of course, like if a friend of yours said like, oh, I'm going to start a YouTube channel, like your first expectation is going to be like, sure, good luck, buddy. Like, and right, like that's like, you don't expect anyone to make it on YouTube. And then so I posted a few videos. I started making one video every single week and it just blew up. And so it's like, right, it was a kind of the right timing because you have a lot, like I said, a lot of VFX artists are learning Unreal now.
I think that time point right there when people were like, what do I do? How a lot of people's jobs are furloughed and like, how do I progress forward? Yeah, that's a good point.
And not just that, it was also there was zero content for film people coming into the real-time world. Nothing about that. There's lots of stuff for games artists and stuff, like, oh, how to improve my frame rate or whatever. But there was nothing, no one to translate any of the VFX terms. Like, for example, UDIMs. In games, nobody knows what a UDIM is because that's not a thing. Like, you don't have 16 4K texture tiles on a single prop.
Yeah, we are soon.
Sure, yeah. But, like, until recently, that was not the case. Like, 5 or 10 years ago, UDIM was not a thing in games. And so like, so people looking for this content, like, hey, how do I get some UDIMs into Unreal? No one knew how to do it. So that was my first video. And they're like, yeah, it'll be a simple thing. And so like I started translating basically all the VFX terms and how to get that stuff into the engine. Yeah,
that's really, really good, clever idea. Cause I feel like sometimes we assume people will, something that sounds like, so like, why has anyone done this? Like, I think that's the time to do the best ideas because you know that it's going to be useful to someone.
Yeah. And so, like I said, right place, right time. I think I just happened to have the gear necessary. I had the microphone. I could do what I needed. And I hadn't really done much video before, but I'm like, hey, you know, time, that's, you know, segue back to what we were talking about earlier, just like learning new things. Like, well, I guess I have to learn video editing now.
But I feel like once you're an artist, you have that aesthetic eye. I truly think that those traditional ground skills of 100%. Like designs and elements of principle and elements of design and like color theory composition. Totally.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games.
Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you.
Because I know that you've been kind of like digging into photography and doing some cool stuff with it. And for me, because I also do photography, I love it because it's just, it forces you to observe something and apply some of those rules that you know. It's kind of like a little exercise. How is his photography like complemented and like helped your technical skills? Like,
oh, I mean, I would not be here if it weren't for photography. I picked up my first camera. My parents gave it to me and I must have been, 15 or something? 14, 15. And it was like an old Canon PowerShot. Like it was just a point and shoot, but it had a manual mode. And that's how I learned all the manual settings on it. And back then in 2012 is when I picked up my first DSLR. So it's been about 10, 11 years now since I've had a DSLR. And like that, like I loved it. It was like, fell instantly in love with that thing. Because like you said earlier, when you're taking photos, you're focusing on composition, lighting, color, all of these things, like values and shape, silhouette, all of these things are super important as an artist. And that can be applied to 3D art, can be applied to film, it can be applied to art in general. It's just an understanding of all these core fundamentals that people gloss over a lot. Where like, you know, a lot of people will like know about all about the latest plugins, the latest tools, the latest stuff. Like that's fine and dandy. But you still need those core fundamentals of art. Otherwise, all the plugins in the world are not going to save you. They're not going to help make your work better.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think because there'll always be the students that like, I feel like, in my opinion, I feel like everyone should know how to draw if you're in the industry. It doesn't mean you have to draw well, but it's just like practice makes perfect. It just, you're in a visual community and you're trying to solve problems. A sketch will always sometimes like solve a problem quicker than words. But photography, everyone's got a smartphone. Almost everyone has a smartphone. It's not that hard to go out and start like really paying attention to not only, you know, you can use grab texture. Yep. Now you can do photogrammetry with it.
Yep.
Photogrammetry, whatever it is. And it's one of those things now. It's like you take photos. Like I remember watching like the Inside Pixar thing where they were talking about one of the character designers. And she was just talking about how she likes to go from Berkeley to San Francisco just to observe people and how they walk. And like move their weight shift, what they're wearing. And it's like, it's observation. Like artists, designers, all we're doing is interpreting the world around us. And if your world is just the video game and the movies you watch, then how are you going to grow? So I think photography is a great way for even people who feel introverted to go out and just think. I also think it makes you stop and really observe.
Yeah. That's the key word here. It's observation, because you're going to notice things that other people won't notice. The amount of time that I would just stare like, oh, that's a really nice rock. You know, like typical 3D artist thing. Like, oh, that's, I like how the moss is like kind of built up. And I would just like stare at this thing. And like, you know, my girlfriend's just like, what are you doing? You idiot. Like,
something wrong with him. Same thing with like in Chicago, I'll be like, I'll just look at sidewalks and like things. And like, I'm probably just standing there looking like I'm just staring at nothing with my head tilted. But you just feel like you can kind of like start painting the story in your head. I'm like, oh, okay. Yep. You can see where the water was dripping from the corner of that building and on that hydrant caused it to rust over. Yep. And the sun was, it's great. I love it. I honestly feel like, you know, whether you're a programmer, designer, like a tech supervisor, anyone in any creative field should really be taking photos. Like, just for themselves or like whatever.
100%. It's going to make you a better artist. Like I made like my last YouTube video with it specifically on that topic, on how photography can make you a better 3D artist or a better artist in general. And not just because of observing, but it's also going to take you places. And I think traveling is so important to just being exposed to different things. It's an amazing learning experience. And a phone is great, but like there's something special about holding a DSLR, like holding a proper camera. And it doesn't have to be a DSLR. It can be like a, you know, like you have a Leica, right? Which is a tiny little thing, but like.
Oh, yeah. So when you say DSLR, I'm like, uh-huh, sure. I'm one of those people that you'd probably like hate taking photos with. Because I know the bare minimum of all the settings.
But that's fine. Like, you don't need to be a camera nerd. There's an obsession, like, in photography as well. There's an obsession on gear. which is the same as like our obsession of plugins and tools and stuff. It's the same thing. And I'm a bit of a camera nerd. I'm a sucker for that stuff, but you know, that's not the important stuff. The important thing is to actually feel excited to go out and take pictures. And that's how, for me, holding a big camera in my hand, like, I get excited and I want to go out. And so that's why a lot of people love shooting film, not because film takes better pictures, because I don't believe that for a second, but some people like that more manual feeling of taking pictures on film. So it's people who say, like, oh, if the movie was shot on film, it's going to look better. Like, eh, like, yes and no. Like,
it comes down to the person operating it.
Exactly. And it comes down to, usually people who do shoot movies on film are usually pretty passionate and know what they're doing. So it's less to do with the actual hardware, like actually shooting on film, but there's also like the technical know-how behind it, which is important.
I remember I did a tour once for Nine Inch Nails, and I showed up every single time, and you go to like these different venues, and there's always there's the band photographer, which I was, and there's like the venue photographers that are hired to the venue, and they had like five cameras all with different lens on. I had like a little little deluxe point and shoot, and they're looking at me like, "Are you gonna shoot with that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't need everything you got right now." And I kind of like slickly move around. I don't have to have like look like I'm like carrying around stuff. So, and that kind of comes down to the stuff too, like you talked about, like all these tools with like Unreal and Houdini, all these different mm-hmm. softwares. It's great, but at a certain point, like, what makes you a really good developer and artist is you know, the way mm-hmm. you got to live life, you got to experience things, but also you have to understand the industry. Like, there's so many things that I feel like, if there's the four legs that we kind of like think about, everyone's all wrapped up on the tech. I'm like, no, there's traditional skills. There's a communication and teamwork. And then there's like living life and understanding the industry. But everyone just focuses on that.
Well, a perfect example is the newest Lion King movie. From a technical standpoint, looks absolutely phenomenal. Beautiful movie. There's no soul.
Yeah.
It just feels like a shell of what it used to be.
What advice would you give to people who are starting on this space? Specifically, let's say the Unreal space, since like, you know, it's the hot topic button these days. Hot button topic. There you go. Hot topic button.
What advice would I give them? Honestly, like, work hard, play hard. Like, honestly, like, when you're starting out, it's a very competitive industry. There's a lot of people doing it. And especially if you've never set foot in the industry yet, it's hard to break into it. Once your foot is in the door, you're okay. You're kind of set for life, so to speak, right? Like, once you have like a studio job on your resume, things tend to work out pretty well, and at least in my experience. But it's getting that foot in the door that's really hard. Yeah. And you're going to have to stand out from the rest. And your portfolio is going to have to be banging. There's no real way around that. But also, chemistry is really important. If you go for a job interview, chemistry is really important, because these are people you're going to be like in the trenches with, right? So, you know, just not coming across as a pompous ass is a pretty useful skill to have.
It is, you know, because there is, I feel like there's more jobs available now than there ever has been.
That's quite possible.
But I feel like, because, you know, there's been, even with like the pandemic and even in 2008 with recession, the industry, animation, visual effects, games, has always thrived. It doesn't go away. There's not even a dip. Because it's like, there's always, people always need that escape. But again, like, to people who are listening, hopefully, listeners, don't, like, it's not just your portfolio, it's like, you know, your number one thing is you're working on a team
with other people.
So like, communication, empathy, helping, understanding, being passionate, like,
but that's hard to demonstrate before you get the job, right? Like, it's one thing that once you have the job, like, keeping it, that being, you know, a good team member, like working as a team and not being a douche, being, you know, not being, having a head to side that can't go through the doorway, that kind of thing. Like, that's not going to fly in a studio. Like, you need to be like a helpful, kind person, basically. But it's hard to break in. Like, it's hard to get noticed, hard to get, you know, that first interview. Cause at least in my experience, like, once I get to the interview, cool. Like, I'm usually good to go. But often it's hard to get that. I got lucky. I very lucky. Right, again, right place, right time with my first job. But if that's not the case for everyone, and like, what do you think? Like, what do you think? As someone, you've probably done some hires before.
What do you feel?
It's like, what do you feel is most important?
I mess with them if I'm being 100% honest, and that's, you know, even with CT Spectrum, the community based content, when I would be mentoring students, I like to shoot the shit. I want to see what they like. I want them to, I want naturally these relationships to be developed. I want to hear, I want them to tell me, I want someone to passionately tell me like,
oh, yeah, man, okay.
I cannot wait to go to Norway. I love taking photos. Where I want to hear what you want to do outside of
okay.
it. I don't like, that tells me that there's more than you than just getting this job, and that you're going to be lasting the long run, as opposed to when someone comes across like, I need this job, I need this job. Oftentimes I find that they're the ones who don't get the job because they're bringing that anxiety, that tension, everything to the interview. And at the end of the day, like, yeah, there's a large stack of people we can choose from.
Yeah.
So I want to work with someone who's relaxed.
Yeah.
And this is a very, like, there's tension sometimes, and there's a lot of problem solving, and there's a lot of personalities, and there's subject matter. Like, there's so much stuff that's going on. So I want someone who's going to be laid back and realize, yeah. hey, this is a job. This is fun. Like, this is like, we get to learn and create and do these things. I don't want someone who's going to be a ball of anxiety, or someone with an ego, like you said, or someone who just is so like defeated. Like, I don't like that. Like, I've had students in the past be like, well, I'm never going to get a job. It's like, with an attitude like that, you won't.
No.
Like,
yeah.
And then change your expectations because there are many jobs out there. And it's not that your school necessarily did a bad job, or you as an individual did a bad job. Mm. It's that the approach to thinking about how to get that job has been completely wrong. Like, I was dealing with someone else the other week, talented artist, wanted to apply to every studio and was not sure why any studio was not getting back. It's easy question was, I'm like, your art isn't cohesive. They're like kind of like battling subject matters
yeah.
and battling art styles. And then you just apply to all these studios and you wonder why they're not responding to you. That's right there. Like,
I mean, I see their perspective, right? They're trying to cater to a bunch of different art styles, because that's what games is all about, right? Like, every studio kind of had their own vibe, their own style.
Exactly. I can't be like, I'm gonna create a portfolio for Last of Us and then like this really good gritty realism, and then be like, I use that same portfolio to apply to go work at like Diablo or World
sure.
Warcraft. It's not gonna work. Like, the skill sets, like, they don't translate. Like, I mean, maybe in the very bottom, but there's yeah. So when it comes to people starting out, I'd say, like, remember that it's not just about your technical skills. Have strong traditional skills.
Yeah.
Communicate. Talk to people. Because when I would interview people, I would literally be like asking them, like, you know, what's your favorite movie? What's your favorite studio? Like, oh, what do you like to do? Like, just, I want to get to know who they are
right.
and what their influences are. And you'd be surprised, 90% of people didn't have any answers for this. It blew my mind. Like, they had never lived life, that they just kept their head down and either drew the same manga character or, you know what I mean, or played the same game. It's like,
yeah.
So I think the best developers and visual effects or games or animation and stuff, example, like what you did, like, they will travel. Mm. They have outside hobbies. They like, they have an actual life.
Yeah.
They know how to balance it. And they bring those skill sets to the actual production pipeline, and they bring their personality, their, like, their love for learning and problem solving.
Yeah.
And it becomes an enjoyable experience. Like, so I guess short word, be chill.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that and just knowing how to communicate with other people, know how to work as a team. Those are very undervalued skills. Because, like, I was young, like, I think I must have been 18 or something. And, like, you know, I was a typical 18 angsty teenager, right? Like, I've learned a lot. Like, that first job that I had was a pretty good learning experience in more ways than one. Not just from, like, oh, I learned a lot of skills, but I also learned on a lot about how to not be a dick in a team environment, right? Like, especially, like, in games where you work with programmers, and, like, programmers always tell you, like, oh, you have to optimize your stuff. I have to look a little bit, you know, kill the polycam, reduce texture budget. I'm like, no, I don't want to. So, you know, understand, knowing how to work with people who are not necessarily working against you, but who kind of, like, hey, look, sorry, I had to have to make your art look crappy because of texture resolution budgets, right?
Well, and that comes down to, everyone has a different way of communicating.
Yeah.
Programmers, designers, artists, even management,
production. Yeah.
Fun fact, as an artist, someone taught me, he said, because the art, whenever anything is high, like, budget-wise, the first person they look at is always art, even though, like, there could be sloppy code and
yeah.
design side that they pop up. It's like, take a couple cubes, subdivide them like crazy, and shrink them and hide them in your scene. And then if anyone ever goes to you and says, oh, you need to reduce that scene's poly count by like, just go in there and act like you're working and just select the spaces and delete it. And they'll be like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's worked. So many, like, I've been using that trick for almost 20 years
now. That's amazing.
But it's a good trick because like, you can delete it, but also it's like, I know that I develop my stuff clean. So before I go ahead and dig in again, because I would always go and dig again. I'd be like, all right, cool. I deleted stuff. And I'd be like, hey, check your code. And then while they're doing that, I can still go back and clean some stuff too, because I feel like the finger is always pointed at the visual aspect.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We definitely feel under attack. But at the same time, that's what I learned is how to cope with that, how to deal with that, how to deal with those people, how to not deal with those people, and alert, more specifically, how to. I definitely have been in situations where I didn't react the right way. And in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that was a really stupid thing to do or say or both. But you know, I was young and you learn.
Yeah, I mean, like when that kind of conflict comes by, I always just will take a deep breath, go for a walk, and come back. And I usually take a day. If someone tells me to do something that I don't necessarily agree with, I will literally take the rest of the day, and then I'll take a deep breath, and maybe I'll work on some other stuff.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I'll kind of, before I say anything, I'll be like, you know what? Maybe they're right. I'm going to try doing XYZ. Because I feel like sometimes when you're deep in the trench, your reaction is emotional, not logical.
Oh yes. Oh, it is. Especially you've been working long hours, you know, like 16-hour days, and someone, and you're like, you want me to do what? And so it's, it's the emotions run high in that kind of environment, right? Especially when you've been sleep deprived and you haven't seen, you know, your friends in like a month.
So you're doing better now, though, right?
Your sleep for sure. For sure. But like, my whole point was that like, you learn a lot in production. You learn a lot, not just the skill sets, you learn about people and how to work with other people. And
when to say no and when to say yes. I feel like I was too eager when I was younger, and now I'm like, no, I don't want to. it's the weekend. No, it's the night. And you realize like how important, literally, and then especially these days working remotely, and like yourself, like being able to sit by your student, and it's something you love, but something that's like right there. So taking that kind of like break to really allow your brain to reset and your body to rest. So what are you excited for coming up in the industry? Like, you know, you seem to have your finger on the pulse of a lot of cool technology that's coming up.
There's so much happening. There's so much happening right now, and it's hard to keep up.
Give me the William breakdown of what you dig.
I'm going to be getting a lot into photogrammetry in the next for the next year or so.
You are. You're working with me on it, so I'm excited.
Yes. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm going to be an ambassador for Capturing Reality, which is going to, so lots happening there. It's going to be pretty cool. Like it's something I've done a bit of before, but it always struck me as kind of not super viable just because of, you know, poly count limitations before, right? So there's so much work involved in photogrammetry between like actually going out on set, taking the photos, scanning it, poly reducing or doing retopo and then just transferring. There was so much work involved that sometimes it was just easier to just make it from scratch, right? But now things are just, I mean, Megascans is a classic example of a massive success of photogrammetry. Megascans is probably one of Unreal's biggest selling points right now. Like, it's getting to the point where I've had people asking, like, oh, well, why would you use Unreal instead of, like, Octane or Redshift or other renderers? I'm like, well, I mean, Megascans alone, that is worth gold. That just makes Unreal so useful and just getting ideas out there. It's just so easy now. Like of course, now I'm more of a VFX type of approach. I'm working more. I'm just trying to get some nice visuals out. I don't do much games-related stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, performance-wise, I think we're still learning on how Nanite is going to work in productions. I think there's still going to be a lot of figuring out.
It's going to be hard. I mean, I think every single time there's new tools, geek out on them. I'm like, oh, we're going to use all these things, like Nanite and Lumen. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't mean, like, you still have the same, like, memory requirements. You're not getting more memory.
No, but Nanite does compress very well. It does. So that's the beauty of it. I can't remember the exact amounts there, but the beauty of Nanite is that when compressed or packaged into a game, it takes up way less space
And does that have LODs built into it, or is it just
It kind of does its own LOD thing, right? So it's kind of all dynamic based on camera space and on the size on screen and stuff. So, like I said, I think there's still a lot of figuring out to do when it comes to nanite. I don't think it's a magic solution to all our problems, but it definitely makes some things easier.
Yeah, same with Lumen. You're like, oh my god.
Yeah, for sure. And that's insane. Like, I think Lumen is very exciting. Both the fact that both Lumen and nanite come out together is just, that's really exciting for the future. So that's one of the main, that combined with photogrammetry, plus not just that, but stuff like Houdini sims and thing, getting all insane simulations into UE5 is like,
yeah. I've never touched Houdini. I want to, but it's super heavy node based, right?
It's totally node based. And that's kind of the beauty of it, because it's a non-destructive approach. So like the way I like to see it is Maya, 3ds Max, Blender, like those traditional modeling packages, those are a Swiss Army knife. You can do a little bit of everything in those things. But Houdini is like the actual blacksmith who makes the Swiss Army knife. You can do anything in Houdini, anything whatsoever. You can build your own system, your own tools. You can do the insanely complex things.
That's where someone like me will not thrive, because I'm an artist. I don't have that. Like, I feel like people who are more like tech artists or tech side, like
just like this guy.
So another good one is like Substance Painter. I love Substance Painter. Super awesome. Someone's like, use Substance Designer. I'm like, nah, I can't.
It's definitely a learning curve. Like, I learned how to use like node-based systems when I was working in film, primarily because I was doing a lot of what we call look dev, so look development, so doing like shaders and materials and that kind of thing, and got fairly proficient in like building node graphs to get the desired look. And having a totally procedural approach to things is extremely powerful, because in Maya, if you want to make like a cobblestone road, you can do it. It's not too bad. But like in Houdini, you can just build entire layouts of streets with that cobblestone road, right? And just change the amount of rows and just the amount of floors in the building just very quickly and easily procedurally, which is very, very powerful. It's inspiring and depressing at the same time. It's just like, I don't want to, no. But I've seen people work in Houdini and like actual wizards with the stuff. And it's just, it makes me feel so like insecure.
No, I think that's the thing too. Like, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and you got to recognize your strengths and weaknesses. Yep. I think that's more why I switched more to the production side. It's like I had my run. I still love learning the content tools and all stuff, but I'm about to do that at my own pace, where I feel like I'm like, all right, I'll just handle the other three things. Like, I know what's going on, but I'm gonna try to help with the organization, personalities, and pushing through and all that stuff. Do you think that the barrier of entry is getting lower for the industry, or
I do think it's easier to get in than it was before. Because at least now, I think everything's a little bit easier. Everything is much more documented. It's quicker to get decent results. Like, I mean, not to say like, back in my day, Pepperidge Farm remembers. But like back in like when I was starting out, like there was very little documentation on anything. You kind of had to learn everything the hard way and just through trial and error. And, you know, it was tough to get into the industry because you had to be pretty decent. And the only way to get decent was by spending a colossal amount of time figuring out how everything worked. And I think back then, like, Gumroad was not a thing. So there were forums, and people had like sticky threads where you could like, here's how you can do this thing here, and they had like some user created thread on how to do this thing. And it was just, I had like the 3ds Max Bible, which is like this thick on how to use.
I learned in the Maya 4 Bible, when it was time to release our things, I just remember burning my demo reel to a VHS tape and sending it out blindly.
Oh man, you're old.
What I'm telling you, like, we had very little. It was just the community.
Yeah, 100%.
Helping each other, like, get in the ditch. You found your core people. And I still have my core people and everybody. Like, I add to it and all like that. And you just kind of like, you find people that, like yourself included, and like even with the authors that we deal with, it's like they generally like to share the information and want to help, and like they geek out on learning and collaborating and working together. I'm like, cool. Those are the people I want to like work with, because it becomes fun. It doesn't, like, it's a challenge, but you're like, you're not doing it by yourself.
No, exactly.
And I think it's hard to do that stuff by yourself. You don't need to. Like, you don't have to prove it to anyone. Like,
yeah.
like working with other people? Because what do you end up doing ultimately? Working with other people.
Yeah. I mean, to answer your question, I think the barrier of entry is a little bit lower now than it used to be. And I think that's a great thing because like there's more studios opening up, there's more projects, like the whole industry is kind of blowing up now and it hasn't ever really gone down. We need more artists than ever because these projects are becoming so realistic and so detailed that, you know, back in the day, you still can make a game in your mom's basement, but it's not going to be a AAA and the right? So it's, you need more people than ever.
Because I feel like there's that called nostalgia still. Sure. That people are like, because I feel like indie game, indie movie, all that stuff, it's people are kind of like drawn to this nostalgia. But yep. I the amount of money is being like pushed into virtual production yeah. and for these streaming services. And then like the game, like, I mean, you saw the like one of the largest mergers between Microsoft and Activision, like so, oh, just a crazy amount yeah. of money. So like there is, it's, I remember when I was in like high school and I'm like, I don't work in games. And everyone was just like, you're not going to make any money. Like, cool. Be the starving artist. And I'm like, okay. Exactly. Like, and I think that's one of those things. It's like, you should do what you want to do. Don't listen to what other people yeah. say. Because if I listen to what other people say, I would have gotten like a job as a lawyer or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think my parents were very worried about me because I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, and they were like, they were worried. They were very concerned. Because, I didn't have really, yeah, when I was younger, like they had, I never really did that well in school because like the way that my brain works is if I don't see the point in something I'm doing, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, I'm in school, I'm like drawing all day and like I'm doodling in my notebooks and stuff and like, you know, grades for not doing so well. And then lo and behold, then I discovered 3D and just shot up and suddenly got passionate about art and doing what I do. And so, and then I got a job and parents were like super like relieved, like, oh, okay, cool. He's not going to end up being a drug dealer.
Yeah. He's going to live with us forever.
So, I think it's a great opportunity for artists to actually earn a livable wage.
Yeah.
Because, I think it's great. And that's kind of what that was perfect for people like me because I'm not much of an academia person. So, and like we work in an industry where like, I don't care where you went to school. You could have gone to Harvard and if your portfolio is garbage and you know, you're not fun to work with, I don't care where you went to school. You could have gone to Princeton or Yale. Like it doesn't matter. Like your degree is irrelevant. It's your work that speaks for itself.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, to even speak to those schools, it's like, that's why I really enjoy what, you know, we try to do with Unreal Learning, what we try to do with ArtStation, what we try to do with CG Spectrum. It's like, between those three of those, we're trying to make content that people can, you know, learn at their own pace. Mm-hmm. Nice thing about CG Spectrum again is the community and the mentorship that's built in with those people. But I think nowadays there is the ability for someone to, I think people need to stop talking about the idea of like not doing school and learning by yourself because you're going to be learning by yourself eventually. It's if you choose to do the school. Mm-hmm. And some people do. I did school. For me, it was like, it got me where I needed to be. And it showed me, I was like you, I'm like, there's so many people that I learned from them, like, oh no, more on, more and more, and I know more than you, I know more than you, I know more. And then you find that one person and those people that made that whole experience worth it, and you're like, cool, that's why. That was a lot of amazing information. Thank you for kind of sharing that stuff. It's really motivational to see that you can create a life where you can live where you want to live and work on what you want to work.
Even more so now, thanks to more and more studios are accepting a remote work, which helps studios and artists. Because now, especially here, the problem they have in Norway is like a lot of studios have a hard time recruiting senior artists because no one wants to move to a snowy hellscape that is the north here. And so,
except for William.
Yeah, I love it. I love snow. I love cold weather, but not everyone does. People would rather live by the beach in LA. Here. So they have a hard time recruiting people. So now that with remote being more globally accepted and it works, I think it just makes it easier for artists to find work where they want to live. It helps studios who are local to or wherever the studio is to find senior artists to work with. So it's kind of a win-win.
So where can we find you?
ArtStation is where I post most of my work. ArtStation, YouTube, and Instagram. But I haven't been doing that much personal work in the past year just because, you know, like work has been taking off and I do want to take some more time to do some more personal work. And I try to do personal work and YouTube at once, or like I do a YouTube video on personal work.
Yeah.
But you know, work, I guess, in a way. But I think like personal projects are the best way to learn. Because it's one, if, for example, if you have to learn a program, let's say I want to learn Houdini. Well, just opening a program and doodling with it, it's not how you're going to learn, right? You need to apply a project to something you want to learn. And that is how you're going to grow and understand and actually see it through to it, see it through to the end.
Well, thank you very much for the time. Forward to seeing all the cool stuff you're working on this year. And for those of you who don't know, he's one of our mentors. So if you enjoy listening to his Sage Tales and have seen his work, which is amazing, I recommend seeking him out. He's a genius.